The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
And away we go. It's another edition of the Arrowhead Pride Editor's Show. My name is Pete Sweeney. I'm the editor-in-chief of arrowheadpride.com, joined once again by my esteemed deputy editor, John Dixon. John, they say that free agency comes in waves, and that initial wave was monsoon-like, and now it is the calm after the storm, it feels like.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, certainly I think there was more activity from the Chiefs than we have seen recently, even though it's never enough to satisfy fans. I mean, fans are always expecting, a whole bunch of moves in the first, 12 hours or whatever. And that's just not the way it's going to work for the Chiefs probably for years to come. So we got to get used to that.
I didn't expect to go on a diatribe so early here, but... Have we not learned anything from last year? What is the panic right now? Yeah. There is panic coming in. And I think initially fans were okay. But then, you start to see some of the key players leave.
Yeah.
And the void is not immediately filled. And there are 6 months until the game. So it's hard to be preoccupied and think about that kind of stuff. But there is complete panic again, especially from the louder members of the fan base,
sure.
Chiefs Twitter, as they like to say. And I just want to go back to last year's free agency when the AFC West was loading up and the Chiefs were standing pat, being patient, keeping their draft picks.
Right.
And then what happened? We learned nothing. They won the championship. They won the Super Bowl title. And so, yes, I think this is a good part of the podcast. I wasn't even planning on this before we get into anything to like, if you're worried about free agency, let's breathe. It's going to be okay. I try to say this every year, not to belittle anyone, but I try to say this every year. It's a tough time of year because we don't see the full blueprint. This has been something that I say where you just see a little bit at a time. And I'm telling you, by the time the draft comes around, this is what the Chiefs do. All of those positions of need will be filled to some extent where if you had to play that day before the draft, you could. Is it going to be the best team? No, but this is what the Chiefs do. This is what they like to do. And they're patient and they wait for the waves of free agency to come back to them. If you notice, no one else has signed Odell Beckham Jr. either, for example. And so I think a lot of teams might be waiting for the price to come down, different things like that. So yes, let's breathe. And then now let's get into our podcast. We got a great show for you today. We are going to, in this first segment, go through the goings, the comings, and the stayings of the Kansas City Chiefs, who left, who came to the Chiefs, who stayed from last year that we know of that is going to be part of this 2023 roster. In the second segment, we'll go through the rest of the news, and then we'll end with a spicy flash poll that is actually getting a lot of play on Twitter. Sometimes these polls are a little bit dull, but I can see that there are a lot of people responding right now to it, and so that'll be a nice discussion at the end of the show. We get no reviews. Again, thank you to Clint McKenzie last week, but we already read it. We're not going to reread Clint's reviews. So if you leave us a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts, we will read it on the editor show. We appreciate all the 5-star reviews. Just helps us get the word out about our shows across the Arrowhead Pride Podcast Network. Our producer, Steven Serta, has been doing a really good job feeding the beast and getting you guys some information about how the Chiefs are attacking this offseason. We got shows throughout the week. And so we will keep it rolling today, John. And we start with the goings. Usually you would say comings and goings, but I think it's more relevant to start with the goings today. Orlando Brown Jr. leaving the Chiefs for, you got to say this, right? It's their biggest rival right now. I don't really consider the Chargers a rival right now. The Raiders, of course, are a rival, but they got to be a little bit better. The Broncos were miserable last year. So go to the Cincinnati Bengals of all teams. It does feel like an interesting storyline headed into what will be 2023.
Yeah, but I'm just not, I mean, it's interesting, but and I think it's fair to say that they probably made a step forward because their offensive line was not very good. And for all that we have to say about Orlando Brown, which is viable and well earned, he's probably a step forward as their left tackle in 2023. So, you know, it's a situation that's probably played out well for both sides, for both teams this offseason. I think the Chiefs have made a step forward, but we'll get to that in a second. But I don't see this as being a thing that's going to make a big difference in the rivalry between these teams either.
I know what you're saying when it comes to maybe the impact on the team. I think it does make their line slightly better, but I can guarantee you that, I mean, this adds to the storyline between the Bengals and the Chiefs. I mean, this is going to be a matchup when these two teams get together again one day down the road where people are going to be eyeing how is Orlando Brown Jr. doing. And I think obviously there'll be some chatter there. I think the key part of what it adds to the storyline and the WWE part of this is this Mike Garofalo tweet that I want to go back to from March 15th at 9:22 PM. This is a deal for Brown to play left tackle. We knew about the left tackle obsession here in Kansas City. And then Garofalo continued. He was adamant. He wanted to stay there. Bengals will allow him to do that and play with a contender that could face the Chiefs in the postseason. So this was very intentional that he wanted to possibly play Kansas City in a big time game. But in a way, I just question it because I know this is an expression, John, but it's like, dude, you played yourself. You had more money on the table, more security. Yeah. It's one of those cases where you bet on yourself and you ended up having the money dry up on you. And you had to take a deal that, look, what is it? $31 million in the first 2 years. That's pretty good, I think, as a consolation prize. But I got to imagine, John, if Brown could go back in time, he would have taken that deal that the Chiefs offered him last offseason.
You would think so. I mean, if what he really wanted was security, you'd think he'd want the longer contract. But I think this is a lesson for him to learn. And there was no other way for him to learn it than to actually go out there and put himself out on the market and see what happened as a result. And I think that that's why the Chiefs didn't tender him. I've said something similar right here on this podcast before. I think the Chiefs, you know, knew that they believed that he wasn't worth what he was asking. And there was just one way for him to know that, because he wasn't listening to them, you know, and that was to go out there and find out for himself. And guess what? He did. And, you know, wish him the best. I think he busted his butt in Kansas City. He just wasn't the guy that the Chiefs needed, at least not at the price he wanted to be paid. So,
yeah. And like, I guess if you're going to go anywhere, you take the Chiefs Bengals rivalry and budding rivalry out of it. You go to a top five quarterback in the NFL. It's a team that's on the rise. Sure. They're going to be a contender, and you try again in free agency. It looks like he'll have an opportunity to re-enter free agency in about 2-3 years here. It's unlikely he plays out the rest of that contract because of the way the numbers are involved. But yeah, I think he made a mistake. I think he liked it here in Kansas City. He had found a home. The Chiefs were willing to pay maybe even a little bit more than he was worth, as we found out in the open market. And kudos to Brett Veach for giving a smile and saying, hey, go test it, young man, and being right about it, right? So maybe it helps those type of situations in the future. A side story on this, Ian Rappaport this morning said the Bengals have had trade conversations centered around left tackle Jonah Williams as the interest heats up in a player who has 47 career starts. Williams requested a trade following the signing of Brown, and since he has heard from several possible suitors. Well, Mr. Williams, if you want to play right tackle, why don't you come over to Kansas City? We have Juwan Taylor moving over to left, right? Let's keep this thing going when it comes
occurred to me that the Chiefs might end up going after him as a trade candidate to put him at right tackle. That's occurred to me. And what a story that would be for this rivalry. Goodness gracious.
Yeah, I think the way it stands now is you're going to have Juwan Taylor at left tackle, at least to start, unless there is something that happens prior to training camp, which could be a trade, a signing, et cetera. I mean, I don't anticipate another type of trade for a tackle. And then they'll try different combinations, see what's working. If they go and trade up and get a left tackle in the NFL draft, like in the first round, maybe they try him at left and one day at training camp. Maybe Taylor's at right. One thing that we see at training camp that maybe we're forgetting right now, John, is like, especially at the beginning, how many times do you see the tweets as you're working from the Arrowhead Pride Command Center, and I'm like, this person's at left tackle today. This person's working at right guard. They try a lot of different combinations, and I think maybe we're going to go into camp saying, oh, Taylor is the no doubt left tackle, regardless of who the personnel is, and then maybe we go up on a Monday and he's playing left, and then maybe we go up on another day and there's a different combination and he's at right, and the Chiefs are just in that process of figuring out, like, okay, what looks the best here? I think there's a lot of possibility going into camp. Ultimately, as it stands now, I think the battle is going to be at right tackle between a couple veterans and maybe a rookie that you get in the later rounds.
I agree. And I think that the Chiefs are in better shape at tackle than people are probably willing to admit. Niang is a question mark for a lot of fans, but the Chiefs liked him enough to start him. Before he went through this string of injuries that he's had the last couple of seasons. So I think he's got a pretty strong case to be the right tackle coming into this season. And I don't think we should count out Prince Tegu-Wanogo. I really don't. The team has hung on to him for a couple of years, and he actually played in a lot of games last year, which is more than you can say for Darian Kennard, for example.
I think you're right. This is a key offseason for both Niang and Prince Tegu-Wanogo.
Yeah.
And I even emphasizing the Niang point, you got to come to training camp strong and ready. Mm-hmm. This is going to be a golden opportunity situation. The Chiefs could draft, let's say they stay at 31 and then they end up taking best player available. And that isn't an offensive lineman. They are likely to take an offensive lineman in one of those day two picks in this scenario. And that player may have an opportunity to battle for it, but that is, if you're taking a player on day two, it's a, let's see what you got. It's not we're going to stamp you in and be a day one starter. So that opens up a door for a golden opportunity for Niang. So he's healthy now. He was on the roster, right? He saw a handful of snaps here and there. Now you come into camp, you're fully healthy, you're stronger. Team has liked you before. Maybe it's finally that year where Lucas Niang is able to break through, and then you have some of these other guys that are depth. But we have talked about offensive line enough. We're already into the 12th minute of the podcast, and we need to move on to something more exciting, like wide receivers and Juju Smith-Schuster. This was a little bit surprising to me, going to the New England Patriots on a 3-year deal. I know the team wanted him back. I know that they were optimistic about the idea of him maybe finding a way back to Kansas City, but I just think Juju Smith-Schuster, though he liked Kansas City, though he liked playing with Patrick Mahomes, turned to himself, turned to his family, likely talked to his agent and said to the agent, I got my ring. Let's go get that bag. And probably got the best offer from New England. The Chiefs weren't willing to match or pay more. And off he goes. And I think he was a good fit in Kansas City. I think Kansas City liked him, but they saw last year that we can lose a top two receiver and win the Super Bowl, we can lose a top 20 receiver and figure out a way. So that's where I think they landed.
Yeah, I agree. And this is one of those deals where in retrospect, it all seems obvious, but the Patriots were looking at every wide receiver on the market. I mean, every day, like every hour, there was a new tweet from somewhere saying the Patriots are talking to such and such, and they're looking at such and such player. And they were all wide receivers. It was clear that they wanted to get a good one. And so what a surprise that Smith-Schuster gets a good contract offer from the Patriots that is more than the Chiefs were probably willing to pay. And so, again, thank you for your service, sir. You know, we appreciate what you did for us here in Kansas City. Enjoy that money that you're going to get from New England.
Juju's one of those players where it's going to be an answer to a trivia question 20 years from now. Like, who who had the most receiving yards for the Chiefs in their second Super Bowl win in that era? You're going to be like, who was the player? Because he was only there 1 year.
What was his name? JoJo something?
Yeah. So I wonder about this. Andy Reid is famously a player's coach and really leans into the idea of you can be whatever you want off the field. I'm sure he doesn't love TikToks. I'm sure he doesn't love skits. But look, if that is what makes the player happy, that's what he enjoys coming to work and doing, you know, in his free time. I think Andy Reid's okay. He jokes about it. We saw the clip of him making fun of Smith Schuster about how he moves faster in his TikTok dances. That's the hidden humor of Andy Reid that you get in some of those mic'd up. But I don't think Bill Belichick is exactly a let your personality show guy.
No,
and I do wonder about the fit. And then I also wonder, and this is just reality, it's like you're going from a Ferrari, as Lewis Riddick likes to say, to a beat up Prius in Mac Jones. And I just don't know if he's going to enjoy his time there. I mean, I could see it going awry. Who knows if he even plays out that contract, right? Like maybe there's a mutual parting. I just don't see the culture fit. And maybe I'm crazy there, but I do think that that is going to be something that comes up in this relationship between Bill, who is a curmudgeon, and Juju, who's full of positive energy in life.
Well, I would just say that we shouldn't be too quick to discount this, because I could see how a receiver like Smith Schuster could be very valuable in the New England offense. I completely agree that on a personality level, this looks like a disaster waiting to happen, because you put it exactly right. He's a player with life and vigor and all of those things, and he may not fit very well into that culture, but on the field, he could actually make a difference in that New England offense, even catching passes from Mac Jones.
And here's the deal, though. TikTok dances are fine when you're on a 14-3 team. When your team is 8-9,
yeah,
and you go out in the week in Boston and you're doing a TikTok dance, I don't know about how those fans are going to necessarily react, but good luck to Juju anyway. I think the Patriots are in the slow incline, but just a huge question mark of whether or not Mac Jones is a capable quarterback. And John, that is the worst question to have when you're an NFL team. So it's unfortunate. Yeah. I wish Juju would have found a way to stay in Kansas City. But you do hope, I think, from afar, when the Pats are not playing the Chiefs, that it works out for him personally. Let's move on to Juan Thornhill. Speaking about a guy who surprised me a little bit, Juan chooses Cleveland. And not that I necessarily expected Juan to want to stay in Kansas City. I did think he was going to get paid. I thought it was very intentional by the Chiefs to select Brian Cook in the second round and find a way to pay less when they knew that Juan Thornhill, two-time Super Bowl champ who really came back into his own last year, was going to get paid. But this is a man that I thought enjoyed his time in Kansas City, and he is awfully excited to be heading to Cleveland, Ohio. And I think he's juiced up. He's someone that has a chip on his shoulder. And I think that for the Chiefs, they valued Thornhill, but it just was never a case where they were going to pay anything close to what he got in Cleveland.
Well, and I think it's pretty easy to see how he would feel the way he feels. You know, when he came back from injury, the Chiefs rather famously decided to put Daniel Sorensen on the field instead of Thornhill, who had looked spectacular as a rookie before his injury at the end of that season. And then, you know, to bring in Brian Cook, you know, clearly the heir apparent at your own position. I could see, or even Justin Reed, you know, the Chiefs, he might have had reason to take offense at the Chiefs not deciding he should be the guy take Tyrann Mathieu's role in the defense. So I guess I can see how he might feel undervalued by the Chiefs. I get that. But, you know, this is the reality of playing in the NFL. Teams are going to do what they need to do to cover their butts. And I think that's what all of those moves were. And if Thornhill wants to be, you know, pissed off about it, that's okay. I get it. but it's a business and business moves on.
Yeah, I'm looking right now at the contract for Thornhill, and it's a 3-year, $21 million contract. And look, it was really creatively made. The cap hit is not so bad, but the fact is that you can just save money when players are on rookie deals. Mm-hmm. And Brian Cook is a player at the end of the year that was really coming into his own. And, you know, we'll see if he can, you know, grab the bull by the horns, grab this opportunity. And I think the Chiefs are buying into that. We'll talk about a role player safety that they signed to help fill that void in just a second here. Last going, we need to talk about, John, is running back Ronald Jones, who left for the Dallas Cowboys. I wrote this up yesterday. My feeling here is that Ronald Jones was originally signed by the Chiefs to be a contributor, but they just ended up getting Isaiah Pacheco and Jerick McKinnon later, and that made Ronald Jones a contingency plan where maybe he was supposed to be a contributor. And the positive for Dallas is I think he showed some juice in that Week 17 game. Do you remember? Mm-hmm. You're like, yeah. Man, mm-hmm. Ronald Jones, he can still play a little bit. He's only 25 years old. He's a former 1,000-yard rusher for Tampa Bay. And he leaves Kansas City having touched the football in the regular season 18 times. So he's got fresh legs. Like, would you really be stunned if in that offense with Tony Pollard and now Ronald Jones is probably going to be that change of pace guy with Ezekiel Elliott gone, that he puts up numbers and Chiefs fans? You know, it reminds me a little bit of what I think we may see is that preseason trade where the Chiefs flipped Carlos Hyde. And he went on to Houston to be a 1,000-yard mm-hmm. rusher. Now, I don't think Ronald Jones is going to be an 1,000-yard rusher, especially with Tony Pollard. But like 600 rushing yards wouldn't surprise me next year for Ronald Jones.
And of course, the Chiefs are very likely to keep Clyde Edwards-Helaire as the backup to Pacheco. So that's going to be a storyline that people are going to monitor this season, is how much Jones gets in Dallas versus how much Edwards-Helaire gets in Kansas City, and then, you know, rate the transaction that way. But I think the Chiefs would rather keep Edwards-Helaire and as a backup who's been in the system for a while, assuming that they don't get some running back that they like in the draft. It's interesting because this was an example of the Chiefs covering their butts going into the draft last year by bringing in Ronald Jones. So they had a guy that could serve in case they didn't get the player they wanted in the draft. And I think they wanted Pacheco in the draft, just didn't know if they could get him there in the seventh round. So they did. And Jones ended up being a guy who was, as you called it, a contingency plan. But more often than not, these players don't even make the final 53. I was amused yesterday when I read that Lonnie Johnson Jr. was being signed elsewhere when I was working on our free agency tracker. And I thought, wait a minute, he was with the Chiefs last year. And he was, he was signed as a roster filling guy. So the Chiefs would be able to go best player available in the draft, and he didn't make the final 53. And now he's, you know, signed a contract to be a player somewhere else. So it was kind of an unusual situation that Jones actually made the 53, because normally they don't. And when the Chiefs make a move like that,
he was not on my projection to make the final 53. I watched him that final day of training camp, and it was really with the third and fourth team. Mm-hmm. There were moments when you're like, there's no way Ronald Jones makes this team. They're not going to want to keep. He requested his release in October. The Chiefs didn't grant it, and they wanted him just in case, you know, they were injured at that position, and he kind of got stuck for a year, but maybe this will be good for him. Rested legs for a year as a running back is not a bad thing, especially when you're still only 25 years old. So I just wonder if there is a resurgence in store for good old Ron, who was with the Chiefs and got his ring, but probably didn't enjoy most of his time here, and I can't necessarily blame him for that. All right, sure. So we have gone through, John, the goings. Mm-hmm. Orlando Brown to the Bengals. Juju Smith-Schuster to the New England Patriots. Juan Thornhill to the Cleveland Browns. Ronald Jones goes to the Dallas Cowboys. Now we're going to get into the comings since we last chatted with you guys. And we'll start with Drew Tranquil, linebacker now for the L.A. Chargers. We had joked, John, that we were looking forward to St. Patrick's Day, mainly me. And what happened on St. Patrick's Day, as I was trying to enjoy some time with my friends, was 14 moves on St. Patrick's Day, and Drew Tranquil was one of them. And he comes in. He's a 27-year-old linebacker. He actually led the Los Angeles Chargers in tackles last year, right? Mm-hmm. I know that tackles aren't everything. We learned that as people complained here and there about Nick Bolton last year, about the value of him, as he's just this tackle machine that finishes second in the NFL. But he had 146 tackles, 95 solo tackles last year for LA. I do like when you dip into the division waters, because there's a little bit of a swing factor there. You do have to play this team twice a year. We had Nate Christensen, one of our good film analysts, review Tranquil, and I'll read his synopsis here. These are Nate's words. If I had to guess Tranquil's role in the Chiefs, I would suggest he takes linebacker Darius Harris's role, which means a one or two series a game behind linebacker Willie Gay Jr., while also handling dime linebacker responsibilities. Gay is a better player than Tranquil, but the Chiefs haven't been willing to task him with 100% of the snap workload. They like to rotate another linebacker in for a few series here and there. Unlike Harris, Tranquil can provide some of the coverage ability and range Gay delivers, so the drop-off in play should be more slim than it was with Harris. As a dime linebacker, Tranquil can be fun. He's by far the best coverage linebacker the Chiefs have had in the Steve Spagnuolo era, and Nate goes on to say that he'd argue he's the best blitzer at linebacker that the Chiefs have had. If he can pick up the playbook quickly, Tranquil can make an impact as the dime linebacker that the Chiefs haven't had throughout the tenure of Spagnuolo as a defensive coordinator. So this is clearly a value signing for Kansas City. And I know this was a storyline midseason, John, about the Chiefs and why they continued to play Harris over Gay. And there had to be a very clear reason about that. You don't know maybe if it was some of the assignment problems, maybe Gay wasn't retaining something that Steve Spagnuolo wanted him to retain, and maybe he wasn't as fast as he wanted. They really liked Darius Harris when Willie Gay Jr. was out for the suspension, but he did seem to be at times a little bit of a liability in coverage. So when you talk about being a good coverage linebacker and being a good blitzer, of course Steve Spagnuolo is going to be interested, and you get this guy 27 years old, and you take him from one division team and you put him on another.
You know, we always like to talk about complementary players at running back and at wide receiver. You know, you've got a guy who can be the third down guy or can be the receiver or the pass protector, or, you know, wideouts that have that can be really good on the field together. Like Travis Kelce is a good complement with Juju Smith-Schuster, as we heard last year. Well, the same thing applies here. You want to have linebackers that you can use in different kind of situations, because that's the way the Chiefs defense operates, with all these sub packages that they dream up, and they put the guys out there in specific situations where they think they'll work the best. So I totally get why the Chiefs would want to have a linebacker just like Drew Tranquil. So I think this is an excellent signing by the Chiefs.
Yeah, Tranquil goes into a linebacker room now, and as I pull up the roster here, John, there is Willie Gay and Nick Bolton. Of course, we have Leo Chenal, Drew Tranquil, and then Jack Cochran, who became a special teams role player guy, and then Cole Christensen, mm-hmm. who hung out on the practice squad all year. We'll see if he can continue to develop. So, you know, you start to, I think, load up on defensive players. I know that linebacker wasn't necessarily a need for the Chiefs, but this is the free agency version, I think, John, of best player available. And there was a good player available, and Steve Spagnuolo mm-hmm. will find a way to use him. She's also acquired Mike Edwards, former Tampa Bay Buccaneer, comes in with 7 career interceptions. Caleb James reviewed Mike Edwards for us, and this was his synopsis on Edwards. While Edwards is more likely best used in sub packages, his abilities could earn him a spot as a starting safety. In 2022, the Chiefs collected only 20 turnovers during the regular season, which ranked 20th in the league. While the team did create turnovers more often in the postseason, ending an opponent's possession by scoring a touchdown can often be the difference between winning and losing. And since 2019, Edwards has 3 pick sixes, tied for first among all NFL players. He's got some Ed Reed to him, John.
Mm-hmm.
And then
Caleb
continues, while this unique skill could play an important role in specific games, Edwards' real value will come from his ability to find the ball, stop big plays, and be a reliable, hard-nosed player whenever his number is called. Edwards' signing is mostly about acquiring a player who can adjust from week to week, allowing the team to maximize his impact. He also comes with a willingness to tackle. So to me, this is the Chiefs saying to themselves, well, we lost Juan Thornhill. Let's get a value player in here in Mike Edwards. And sure, I think that the Chiefs feel confident about Brian Cook being able to handle this, but he still is only in the second year of his career. Right. Bring a guy in with 4 years of experience. So if there is still some growing pains with getting Brian Cook involved, you do have a guy that has been there before.
This is a little TCB going on here, training camp battle, because they're going to look and see which of these guys is going to work the best for them. There's a little bit of the complementary player thing going on here too, I think, that, you know, he provides some things that maybe they don't get elsewhere in the safety room. But basically this is going to be the Chiefs making sure that they don't have to draft a safety. This is another best player available in the draft move. We'll put a guy there to take Thornhill's place and maybe contend to be a starter. And then we can do what we need, whatever is the best thing to do at any given moment in the draft.
Yeah, it was a one-year deal for each of these guys. SpotRack is reporting $5 million on Tranquil and then $3 million for Mike Edwards. Other comings, the tenders come in for exclusive rights free agent Shane Buechele. That was obvious. I didn't think the Chiefs were letting Shane Buechele go, especially with Chad Henne retiring. We talked a little bit about Prince Teguanogo. He was also tendered to stay with the Chiefs. I think he is going to be a dark horse in that tackle battle as it stands right now between Niang, draft pick X, and Winogo. Or if they do draft a left tackle, that could be a more complicated battle, right? Because right. Then maybe they're working. If they draft a left tackle, the Chiefs, that is going to spell trouble for Mr. Niang and Mr. Winogo, even though he's a prince, because they're going to be very tempted to just leave Juwan Taylor alone and see if tackle X can do it. And yeah. So they're going to become more depth players, but it's good to keep the depth going, right? We know what happened in the Super Bowl versus the Bucks. And so the Chiefs very intentionally, and by the way, Mitch Schwartz made this point in the forward of A Dynasty Begins, which is available now everywhere, that night they decided their offensive line room was going to be 8 or 9 or 10 players deep rather than, you know, just the 5 studs with questionable guys behind them. And so this is part of that energy, I think, making sure you retain Winogo.
A very impressive plug you worked in there, Pete. I'm very, yes. very proud of you there. Nicely done.
Yeah, thank you.
I think this is going to be one of the interesting things that we could see happen this year if the Chiefs end up getting a well-regarded left tackle prospect in the draft. Then what do you do? Do you put him at right tackle and put Taylor at left tackle? So you've got two guys playing out of their normal positions in this coming season, but and then switch them again the year after that. I don't know if that's the right thing to do. I'm not sure you wouldn't be better off having Taylor continue to play the right side and put your rookie at left tackle.
So sometimes I'll bump into Chiefs fans, and then, you know, I have some friends that of course are Chiefs fans living in Kansas City, and they're always like, well, what do you think the Chiefs are going to do in the draft? Like, for me, my best guess right now is wait for an offensive lineman to fall that they like, a tackle to be more specific, a guy that can play tackle, to hopefully fall in the 15 to 25 range. And then you see a similar trade to last year with Trent McDuffie, where, you know, the Chiefs did not think Trent McDuffie was falling to them or falling in their range, right? He didn't fall there.
Right,
fell into a possible range where you don't have to sacrifice too many assets to get him. And so that's my best guess. And my goodness, if there's one thing that Patrick Mahomes will never be able to say in Kansas City, it's that Mr. Tackle X in a trade up gets to walk out in Kansas City, a member of the Chiefs. I mean, how cool of a moment will that be if the Chiefs do trade up, not only for a tackle, but for any position? Like, how cool will that be to come out on that stage and just to instantly be embraced by the community here in KC?
Yeah. Oh, I agree. I agree. But I think if that happens the way you're describing, this could be a lot of ink that we could expend here at Arrowhead Pride discussing how the Chiefs are going to handle that. Electrons. I know hopefully, we don't actually do ink. So
hopefully it's not an offensive lineman. So there's a crowd surfing possibility at Union Station.
Right.
I mean, I feel like if it's an offensive lineman, crowd surfing is going to be rolled out. We'll see. But anyway, long story short, that is my best guess for what the Chiefs do right now. I'm sure I'll be wrong because, I mean, this is a far out prediction hard to predict the draft, but we will see. They do choose not to tender who was a restricted free agent, Darius Harris. Doesn't necessarily mean Harris will definitely be gone, but I think we'll see how that ends up playing itself out. They opted not to, and, you know, you acquire Tranquil, and, you know, you could see in our review here at AP that maybe he will fill that void left by Harris. So Harris enters free agency there.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that's clearly the thing you need to do if you get a player like Tranquil on the roster is let Harris go. And that's too bad because Spagnuolo said several times last year that they felt that he'd really earned playing time when he was filling in for Gay. And I think that was part of the equation in why he got playing time after Gay returned, was they felt he'd earned that opportunity. So I think there was a certain amount of regret there, but I think in Tranquil, they saw a player that could really help them, and they went there.
All right. So we've gone through the goings, the comings, Drew Tranquil, Mike Edwards, Shane Buechele, and Tego Inogo will be back for what will be 2023. The other stayings, John, are Derek Nnadi, brought back on a, we believe it will be a one-year deal. Remains to be seen. It seemed that way. And also Nick Allegretti. And so no-brainers and more depth, I think, here than anything else in that defensive tackle and then inside utility offensive line role.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Allegretti's been very good at it. And has earned the opportunity to come back and play after his rookie contract is over. Is a great example of a player who, you know, was taken late in the draft. Was he a late draft? I think he is. And has become a valuable player on the team. He's not a star, but he's more than fulfilled what the Chiefs have invested in him. And I think it's great to see a player like that to make that transition to being a post rookie contract player. Congrats to Nick Allegretti.
Yeah. The Chiefs nabbed, I just looked it up. The Chiefs nabbed Allegretti in the seventh round of the 2019 NFL draft. So just really a continued theme of the Chiefs nailing these sixth and seventh rounders. It's pretty fascinating. I mean, not to say that Allegretti is a world beater. We predict him to unseat a Trey Smith or what would be a Joe Tooney. Right. But Tooney was injured for the first time in his career last year. And just to have a guy that you're like, okay, we're going to be all right for a week. We're going to be all right for 2 weeks. You know, you don't want Allegretti to start 17 games for you, but that is such a value there. And then with Derek Nnadi, I think the Chiefs probably had higher hopes for Derek Nnadi, drafting him in the third round a couple years back. But at the same time, it's still a reliable player. And if he's willing to stay for, you know, what would be decent money in Kansas City, why not continue to keep him there to have a player as a run stuffer there next to a Chris Jones? You're looking at the defensive tackle room right now. You have Nnadi, of course, Chris Jones, Turk Wharton and Danny Shelton, and then who's going to become even more of a positionless player, I think, here in Kansas City is Charles Amenihu, who we talked about a bit last week. I'm having trouble remembering that it's Amenihu. The Chiefs put out a tweet yesterday that I thought was clever. It's like, Amenihu, Amenihu, that's who, which I'm sure not everybody loves, but I thought it was pretty good.
Okay. Well, you noticed that I dropped him in his pronunciation in an article yesterday. That was largely for you, Pete.
So I know. Reminder. Yes. Yeah. I know what it is. I'm just having a tough time locking it into my brain at this stage. So that's the off-season version of Pete Sweeney. We're not nearly in regular season form yet. So let's just keep that in mind. All right. So we have our comings, our goings, and our stayings right here on the Arrowhead Pride Editor Show. When we come back, we will get into the rest of the news. Stay with us.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Back here on the Arrowhead Pride Editor's Show, John, it is a pretty rainy day here in,
yeah,
in Kansas City. Gloomy. And I like doing the editor show when it's sunny. So, you know, I could take a nice walk after we finish here talking to you for an hour. Mm-hmm. But not today, because I don't know where my umbrella is. So I won't be doing that. So we get into the rest of the news here, John. We did have an opportunity last week to chat with Jawan Taylor and Charles Amena. I'm doing it again. What is it? It's Amenahu, right?
Amenahu, yeah. Yeah.
I cannot get it into my brain. Amenahu, I'm sorry. Charles Amenahu. And I took away from the Taylor chat, I kind of predicted this, that he was going to say, I'll play wherever the coaches want me to. But you could tell he's just stoked to be in Kansas City. I thought my favorite part of the press conference was when he told the media that as he was playing the Chiefs, that he really he felt like it could be a home, which is not something that players are always willing to say when they come from mm-hmm. other organizations. Like, yeah, I played at Arrowhead twice last year, and I knew that this was a possibility. But you could tell that he was very interested in Kansas City, and luckily for him, Kansas City was interested in him.
Yeah, that's always a good outcome, and that is a little odd. You don't really – that's not a thing you normally hear. You hear people say, I'm just going to play where the coach wants me to, you know, 10 times every season, mostly from rookies. So that was not a surprise. But for him to say, yeah, I thought this is a pretty cool place when I played here, you don't really hear that all that often.
Yeah, I like that. And then I ended up doing the article on Charles. I'm not getting into that anymore. And my favorite thing about his press conference was hearing about the trade and how the trade from Houston, who had changed regimes and kind of threw him away as a non-productive player, flipped mm-hmm. him for a sixth round pick. I mean, you think about being flipped for a sixth round pick. That guy is not supposed to reemerge and be ready for what would be a pretty nice contract from the Kansas City Chiefs. You did an article for us, John, regarding his contract. He'll only cost the Chiefs $5 million, right, against their cap for the 2-year, $20 million deal. But that's still pretty lucrative for the player, and it becomes an affordable contract for Kansas City.
Yeah, that was actually a nicely designed contract. It took a few days to get those figures, and I think a lot of people were kind of freaking out about it because, you know, off the top on a 2-year contract, you know, how do you make a deal like that work where you're not just paying $10 million in the first year, kind of like the Marquez Valdez-Scantling contract from last year. People were really worried about it and ended up working out okay. And this one was a pretty favorable deal for the Chiefs in the first year, and it's not a stupid amount of money in the second year. I thought it was a well-designed contract.
62 quarterback pressures is really going to bolster the defensive line, mm-hmm. too.
Yeah.
Right? It
mm-hmm.
would have been right behind Chris Jones last year and ahead of Frank Clark. And so, you know, I think that line is improving, and we've said it a couple times on this podcast, but I'll reiterate, this is a perfect player for what is a positionless defensive line where you can really line up players anywhere. And this is a little bit of old school Steve Spagnuolo, where rather than having defensive tackle, defensive ends, just defensive linemen, you don't know where these guys are going to go. And that's really tough to prepare for. Like, a lot of times these offensive linemen will try to prepare for certain edge players that might be on their side and study them and whatnot. And it makes it a lot harder to prepare for the Chiefs defense when they could bring all different kinds of looks. And I believe that started with Joe Cullen, who's really, I think, masterminded this thing.
Yeah. We had a piece on the site yesterday. I was just looking for it to see I could reference it more specifically, yeah. But I happen to edit it, so I kind of remember how it played out. But the piece was talking about the number of snaps that Omenahu had at different positions. And the thing that struck me about it was that he's very much a player in the mold of Chris Jones. The Chiefs are actually getting a player that they can use sort of the way they wanted to use Chris Jones, was primarily as an edge rusher and the ability to work on the inside. And it didn't work out for Jones, But maybe that's just because he's Jones. And maybe Omenihu is the guy that can really make a player like that work. And if that's the case, to have a player that like that that they wanted and Chris Jones playing at his best, that's a pretty good combination right there.
I did see that Chris Jones put a picture of Omenihu on his Instagram story. So he approves. Jones approves of the addition there along the defensive line.
Absolutely.
The Chiefs are on a short list of teams still in the market for Odell Beckham Jr. We know that Beckham had workout a week ago, and the Chiefs were among three teams remaining that apparently were still interested. I tend to think that Dallas is maybe out now, just considering they did trade for Brandon Cooks and reworked his contract. They could be happy there. And so we'll see. I think as this goes on longer, this plays into a better situation for the Chiefs, because let's say there's Chiefs and another team that was out there was the Jets, for example. Let's say it gets down to those two teams. I mean, it's going to be a little bit of a battle of NFL chicken, where it's like, all right, are you going to pay $6 million, or are you willing to do it? And then, you know, I think the longer it goes, it plays into the value of where the Chiefs see him. And I just still tend to think, I'm just going to throw it out there, right? Because Odell has tweeted out that he doesn't know where the $20 million came from, but it doesn't want it to be four. So he wants more than $4 million guaranteed dollars, which if he's showing that he can still play, feels acceptable to me. But still, I think Veach would much rather it be in my mind, I'm like, I wonder if this is Veach offering $4 million with up to $8 million in incentives. Like, that feels like a very Veach thing. And because of the not likely to be earned, then that only would cost the Chiefs $4 million against this year's cap. And even if they're easily hittable, because he missed a year of football, right? You could push that other part of the salary to the next year. And so I think the Chiefs are still in this thing, but as they've shown in recent years, they're going to name their price and you're going to either accept it or they're not interested anymore, which is a good way to do business when you have a player like Patrick Mahomes and you have other guys to pay big money.
Well, okay. So OBJ wants $4 million. Okay. Good for you. That's what
you want. More than four million.
He wants at least $4 million. Let's put it that way. Okay, fine. That's your asking price. That's fine. You get to name your asking price. That's the way the system works. But as I always used to say when I was selling stuff on eBay all the time, there's a difference between what people are asking and what it will sell for. And that's the problem that Beckham has right now. His last contract for a single year with the Los Angeles Rams was $1.3 million. Okay, that's it. And if he thinks that he can come off a season where he didn't play at all and is coming off an ACL injury, that he's going to get at least $4 million. I think he, you know, needs a reality check, just like the other OBJ needed, the one that we discussed earlier in the podcast. And I think he's going to get one right now. My personal opinion is that the Chiefs are in this not because they want to be a team that's going to pay Odell Beckham Jr. a lot of money. I think they're in this because they want to be completely informed if no other team gets him for the price that he wants, and the Chiefs end up signing him for, you know, $1 million, $1.5 million, just so he can get out there and reestablish himself this year. That's my opinion. I think the Chiefs are just waiting for that opportunity to get him really cheap.
It's hard for me to judge Beckham. I mean, he is so athletic when he's healthy, and he's so good, and he's, and I understand where he's coming from, but he would be better suited in my mind, now that I'm an agent or nearly athletic as Mr. Beckham, to take a year, take the salary, and if you're unhappy with that salary, play your ass off. And I understand you're going to be 31 in November. You'll be 31 next offseason, but that could still turn into a pretty big payday for you in my mind.
Sure.
I don't know. I wonder if he says to himself eventually, all right, my market was not what it was or what I thought it could be, but maybe I could find a team that could get me paid. Oh, look at what Patrick Mahomes did in 1 year for Juju Smith-Schuster, another injured guy.
Yep.
Take the 1 year deal. And hey, maybe it goes so well that you're able to work out something with Kansas City next year. But at the very least, you're playing with the best quarterback in the game. You just saw it work on a case study. You don't have to reference back too far with Juju Smith-Schuster to see how he got himself paid. Look, if you're healthy, Odell, you're probably going to have better numbers than Juju had here in Kansas City. I mean, it could be in the 1,200 range, especially because of that wide receiver room. You don't know. And then you go get paid and you go get that multi-year deal, 2 or 3 year deal next year. I just think it feels no-brainerish for both sides. And I think that it could work out eventually. I tend to think, and we'll get into the flash poll in a bit here, but I just tend to think that feels still like the most likely move at wide receiver because it doesn't involve assets as far as draft picks, which is
sure
what it would take to go and get DeAndre Hopkins, who the Chiefs have been connected to. And there was some news over the weekend where Dez Bryant tweeted out, "I wouldn't be surprised if Odell or D-Hop go to the Chiefs. I wouldn't be surprised if both guys go to the Chiefs." And you know who liked it? Look at us in 2023. This is a big-time story. Patrick Mahomes went on his Twitter, and he liked it. And let me tell you, it created tens of 20 headlines, John, about how now it feels like the Chiefs are getting both of these guys. I don't think it's a both thing, but I would tell you that I think it's likely they get one of these guys. I really feel that way right now. But it both feels like that's not a scenario that would happen.
I'm not sure I'd go as far as saying I believe it will happen, but I could easily see that it could happen. And I'll just go back to what I said before. I think that OBJ thinks he's worth more than the market will pay him. And I think the Chiefs might be in a position to take advantage of that situation. And I think they could do the same thing with Hopkins, who is also kind of in that situation. He hasn't had a great year the last couple of years. Some of that's on him, you know, but he kind of needs to establish himself again as a top receiver in this league. And I think that's going to make it hard for the Cardinals to get the compensation they want to move him. And so I'm more inclined to think that if one of these guys goes to the Chiefs, it's going to be Beckham, but I don't think it's going to be for a lot of money.
That's how I feel too. I think it's going to be a very smart, well-designed contract where the Chiefs can get him for a low cap number this year, keep it under their cap, and have incentives built in that if he's healthy, he will very reasonably hit, and that'll be the deal, and he'll come to the Chiefs as, and I feel this way, you know, now both of these guys are health question, but wide receiver too. I think they still see Tony as that guy next year, but I think that's a conversation for another day. When it comes to Hopkins, Ian Rappaport yesterday said, as the status of star wide receiver DeAndre Hopkins comes into focus, talks are ramping up among the interested teams. Sources say, similar to Brandon Cooks, a trade would likely mean an altered contract. I know that the tweet came from Ian Rappaport. It might as well have been Hopkins' agent, because that's who gave him this information. Things were ramping up, and we saw no information come through last night. So we'll see. I think it's just sit and wait on Hopkins. Both of these guys are taking their time, quite obviously, and the Chiefs are taking their time too, and they're not going to do it for paying too much for what would be Odell Beckham Jr. or trading too high of a pick for DeAndre Hopkins. And Hopkins would certainly have to come with a reworked contract if he came to Kansas City with all the players that they're involved with. We're going to burn that next topic, John, and go right to Chiefs create 2023 cap space with the bonus conversion on Patrick Mahomes' contract. And you wrote something else about just the idea that, yes, they made this room for Patrick Mahomes, but when it comes to their draft picks later on in the offseason, they don't need as much cap space as people think here.
Yeah, the Mahomes break glass in case of emergency contract is what we like to call it around here, where the Chiefs can just instantly, with a stroke of a pen, go create cap space. Don't have to negotiate with Mahomes or anything. It's just something that's already built into the contract. We just changed this roster bonus that gets paid around the beginning of the year, league year, into a signing bonus, and then we can spread it across a few years. It took $12 million of the, I think it was $34 million that was available to do that. and turned it into a signing bonus, which opened $9.6 million in cap space for the Chiefs. One of the things that's interesting about this is they didn't take the whole amount, you know, and that is something that's interesting because even if they took it and they didn't need it, they can still roll it into the following year. So that tells us that the Chiefs have a pretty clear idea about how much cap space they thought they needed. And they got that amount of space from Mahomes' contract. Could that be because they are on the verge of signing Chris Jones to an extension that will create cap space for 2023? That could be. Could that mean that there's no way they're going to pay DeAndre Hopkins or Odell Beckham Jr. anything close to what they would want? Yes, it could mean that. Or it could also mean that they're almost done with what they're going to do in free agency. We just don't know. But then every year, and you introduced this correctly, is this something that bugs me every year, that people are talking about, well, the Chiefs are going to need X number of dollars to sign their draft picks. No. When the draft concludes, the draft picks will have no impact on the salary cap. They won't have any impact until they are signed, and most of them won't have any impact after they are signed because of the way the salary cap works in the offseason. Only about $1 or $2 million will be needed for the Chiefs to sign their draft picks after the draft. This is a thing that matters. It's, you know, a couple million dollars is not nothing. But it's not like the Chiefs are going to have to hang on to, $10 million to sign their picks.
Well said, John. Thank you for making sure that the listeners understand that the Chiefs have enough money for the 100th year in a row. I think that's a good thing. I want to finish up our news roundup with the latest mock draft from Mel Kiper. Mel Kiper has the Chiefs actually taking a local player here. If you think I couldn't pronounce Charles's name, I am going to have a tough time with this one. It is defensive end Felix Anudike Uzma. And here's what he says. The Chiefs let Juju Smith-Schuster leave in free agency, and their wide receiver depth chart looks a little thin. He thought about Jalen Hyatt in Tennessee as a new deep threat for Mahomes, but he's going to trust Andy Reid's ability to find contributors just about anywhere. This leads him to the edge rushers, and Felix is a player he really likes and wanted to get into these predictions somewhere. There's some buzz around NFL teams about him after the combine. He had a great workout there, and he was super productive in college, racking up 19 and a half sacks over the past two seasons. KC replaced Frank Clark with Charles Menehu, so Felix likely would be a situational pass rusher as a rookie, and we'll see. I mean, they really, I think, pretty much instantly plugged in George Karloftis there if they went in this direction. But I always say with these mock drafts, it's, to me, it's more interesting about the positions. And you do a nice job, John, of rounding up the positions of where the mocks are pointing to for the Chiefs. 38% edge rusher, and the next highest position is wide receiver at 19% and offensive line at 19% tied. So a lot of people feeling like the Chiefs could go edge rusher in this NFL draft.
Yeah, this is interesting. You know, last year, the positions that were picked by the mock drafts that we picked were kind of evenly spaced between several positions. This year, however, edge is the clear leader with, you know, twice as many picks as any other position. So I think that counts for a lot when we're looking at these figures.
Yeah, and we'll see. It's just so hard to predict when you're picking number 31. Not that it would be more fun if the Chiefs were picking in the top 10. I guess that particular weekend would be fun, but it's a lot more fun for us when they are picking in the back end of the draft, because that means we are covering a lot of playoff games. All right, let's finish up here on the editor show with our flash poll. John, this is what I asked the Arrowhead Pride readers and listeners. Choose only one path when it comes to the Chiefs wide receiver room. I gave the options: sign Odell, trade for DeAndre Hopkins, sign Mecole Hardman and DJ Shark, or trade up in round one for a wide receiver. Where do you think most Chiefs fans went?
Oh, boy. I'm going to say signing OBJ.
So this is surprising to me too, John. In votes of 4,000 Chiefs fans, signing OBJ came in last. Most Chiefs fans would like them to trade for DeAndre Hopkins. That's 53.8% of Chiefs fans. So every other Chiefs fan, look to your left and look to your right. One of them wants DeAndre Hopkins. 25% want to bring back Mecole Hardman and sign DJ Chark, who's still out there, probably would be available for an affordable deal. And that would get you two receivers, more role player receivers into that room. 12% say trade up in round one for a receiver, and just 9% say sign OBJ. So OBJ is not really in favor,
in favor of
most Chiefs fans, but a lot of them want to see DeAndre Hopkins, who, you know, would project as that true number one receiver, come to Kansas City. I think a lot of Chiefs fans are dreaming about Mahomes to Hopkins. He's certainly one of the better players in the league. We would have to see how his health is and all that, but should he be healthy, I mean, that would be an elite 1-2 punch there between Mahomes and Hopkins.
Well, you know, I guess that shouldn't surprise me. You know, once again, saying, you know, in retrospect, this makes all the sense in the world. But, you know, fans always want the player that's going to make the most sense on the field. And Hopkins may very well be that guy. The question is whether or not the Chiefs can afford to get Hopkins. And I don't think that, as we discussed a minute ago, I'm not sure the Chiefs are in a position that they can really make a deal that'll work for them in order to get Hopkins. OBJ, I think they can make a deal that would work for them. And of course, all the other options are in that group as well.
Well, OBJ is build your own contract. Trading for Hopkins is you got to restructure. Figure it out with the Cardinals, and it's just a lot less complicated with OBJ. But it remains to be seen. I will tell you this. So long as it happens at a decent hour of the day, we will jump on immediately if one of these guys comes to Kansas City for an emergency podcast and discuss it with whoever is available here at Arrowhead Pride. Of course, that goes into our Arrowhead Pride Podcast Network, with a great job by Steven Serta, who did a great job on the show today. So thank you to him. Thank you to John. Keep it locked in here. If you leave us a rating and a review, which we encourage, we, of course, will read the review right here on the Arrowhead Pride Editor Show. You can pick up A Dynasty Begins. It's available everywhere right now, Amazon, et cetera. Someone left it. Speaking of reviews, John.
Yeah.
Someone bought it on Amazon and left me a 3-star review, and it's the only review. So now it pops up on Amazon as a 3-star review. So if you somehow bought it on Amazon out there, and this is a plea to you, and you enjoyed it, just go back on Amazon and hit the 5 stars for me, because it's driving me crazy. Anyway, that's A Dynasty Begins. It's available in a lot of places. You can get it as well. I said thank you to Steve. I said thank you to John. This has been another edition of the Arrowhead Pride Editor Show. Have a great day.